The FBI in February admitted with the release of a report from the Bureau's Inspector General that it had recruited an informant to infiltrate and to spy on the civil rights group Black Lives Matter Denver. That informant went so far as to try, unsuccessfully, thank goodness, to convince two members of Black Lives Matter to assassinate the Attorney General of the U.S. state of Colorado. Was this informant a whistleblower? Of course not. He was a rat. He was a snitch, a criminal. But what happens when the whistleblower is not the stereotypical truth teller? After all, whistleblowing comes in many forms. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Charles Littlejohn has become something of a controversial figure in whistleblower circles. The 38-year-old former contractor with the U.S. Internal Revenue Service was recently sentenced to 5 years in a federal prison for leaking Donald Trump's tax returns to the New York Times and to the investigative journalism website ProPublica in 2020. Littlejohn also sent the Times the tax returns of billionaire Elon Musk and others, he said to show that the very rich pay little or no taxes. The Biden campaign seized on the revelation to portray Trump as out of touch with the working man. Reasonable people can agree to disagree about whether Littlejohn did the right thing or didn't do the right thing, but two aspects of this case stand out. First, Littlejohn's sentence of 5 years stands out as unduly harsh, especially having come from a judge appointed by Joe Biden. And second, in a sentencing statement, the judge said disingenuously that Littlejohn's actions put American democracy at risk, and she compared him to protesters and rioters who took over the Capitol building on January 6, 2021, and who tried to overturn the 2020 election. That's absurd, of course, but that's the ugly current political atmosphere in Washington. We're very happy to be joined by Lionel. He's a noted media analyst, substantive expert, and conversationalist. Lionel, thanks so much for being with us. It's good to see you again.
Indeed, sir. It's great to be a substantive expert.
You are.
It's that non-substantive, that's the problem.
That's the problem. There is so much to talk about on this issue. Let's start with the case of Charles Littlejohn. I personally believe that Charles Littlejohn is a whistleblower, although at the same time, I can actually see why people might disagree with that. So give us your opinion on this case, and does Littlejohn's motivation matter when determining whether he's a whistleblower?
I don't think it matters at all, I'll be honest with you, because it's the action of what you do, not why you did it. And the same thing goes, for example, in law. It doesn't matter why I hit you or why, unless it negates or vitiates intent.
Right.
But in this particular case, when you talk about somebody who goes in, and here's the problem. When you have somebody who works for a government, and he, by virtue of a variety of natural agreements, you are not to divulge information that could affect the operational integrity of this organization, whether it's the post office or the IRS or what have you.
Right.
I think it's rational. But let me ask you this. What happens if I work for a pharmaceutical company or an insurance company and I find out that that you, by the way, have a particular disease or that you were denied something because of your sexuality or something? And I think, you know, I think society would benefit and I violate HIPAA laws by divulging this. Now, and I hate to say this, but this is the number one legal answer, John. It depends. It depends on what these are. But you said, I believe somebody is a whistleblower. Let me ask you something. Please determine what's the difference between a whistleblower and a snitch and a rat or a confidential informant. I mean, is somebody who basically is caught and says, look, I'll give up my co-defendants if you leave me alone. I don't think that's a whistleblower, or is it? I don't know. It depends upon, I think, your culture, your position,
and your
intent.
And that's really part of the debate, because in many of these cases, one man's whistleblower is another man's rat. One of the things that we often hear from prosecutors is that they ask for these ridiculously long sentences as a way to frighten other people who may be considering going public with sensitive information. That has always struck me as outrageous because, first of all, there will always be whistleblowers. Second, whistleblowers are what help secure democracy, openness, transparency. And third, and I don't mean to sound cynical, but prosecutors get promoted by pushing for the longest sentences possible. After all, they can't make careers by asking judges to impose short sentences.
Oh, yeah. So right, exactly. By the way, by the same token, you know, when you have people who are public defenders and people mm-hmm. who run for office, I know in Florida where I'm from, the public defender runs for office. How do you run for an office that says, by the way, if you vote for me, the person that breaks into your house and molests your animal tonight, yes, I'm going to do everything in my power
exactly.
to get them off. So vote for me. So
exactly.
it's a weird, you know, justice is a very strange thing. But, you know, you talk about something. A while back, I'm sure you're aware of this, sentencing guidelines came out. And the sentencing guidelines, the spirit behind it was that we're tired of sentence discrepancy. And we're tired of judges finding people different levels of sentencing depending upon where they're from. It's like, no. This is the judge who sits in and listens to this case, not somebody, not in Alabama. They hold cocaine differently than, let's say, California. So what happened was we had this ridiculous sentencing guidelines, which I think was one of the worst days possible mm-hmm. because it applies this idea that you could put something into a formula and get an answer. But also, I think society has to be something kind of commensurate here where we say, wait a minute, the worst possible crimes against humanity, I think, you know, children and murder and should get the worst punishment. And somehow a bogus Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, I don't understand it. So I'm with you. But let me ask you this. Again, I'm sorry. I'm ruining this because maybe I'm a whistleblower. There's an opening line that all prosecutors do, and they tell juries during voir dire or during opening statements, listen, if you're going to try to bust the devil, you don't get angels to help you. They don't know. We don't know what they do unless we enlist somebody from within that circle. So you might call him a rat, you might call him a whistleblower, but how are we supposed to find this out? I don't know what you think about the notion of the Pentagon Papers, but
right.
without Ellsberg, it would have never
we
happened.
Wouldn't have known.
How do you think Julian Assange mm-hmm. is a journalist, not even, in my opinion, not even a whistleblower. He's a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, not only are we inconsistent, we are schizophrenic in terms of how we apportion respect and admiration for people who basically, as you say, make society run.
Leno, you brought to my attention a situation in New York City where undocumented workers who are injured on the job and who then report their companies to authorities for workmen's compensation fraud can get papers from the government to legalize their work status in the United States. I had never heard of such a thing until you pointed it out. Tell our viewers what this is all about.
It's called deferred action, and it works like this. A lot of these unscrupulous businesses will take these poor, and I say this sometimes because anybody who comes into this country to benefit their family and get a piece of the American dream, I understand 100%, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but they'll come and they'll work in a work site. Let's say it's yours, and you know you've got this guy from, you know, Venezuela or something, and he's illegal, and you maybe don't equip him with the best safety equipment.
Right.
Maybe you don't really care. He hurts himself, and you say, listen, I'll tell you what, here's a couple of bucks. Go to the hospital. Don't tell anybody where you're from because they're going to deport you. And normally, if it was a worker, I'd have workman's comp. There'd be unions. There'd be all kinds of considerations, better safety considerations. So what they do is they use these people,
mm-hmm.
benefit from their hard work. And then when they're injured, mm-hmm. they threaten them with deportation or whatever. So now this
right.
is called a deferred action where DHS and others and state labor agencies will actually not only protect these workers, but accelerate and green light a faster application. We can kind of argue that one, but I think in theory it makes sense because if you're going to benefit from these people working at substandard wages, not paying Social Security, not enjoying any of the protections you have, you've got to have something to help them in the event they're injured. So it does make sense. However, here's the downside. Let's mm-hmm. say you own a construction company and I'm the worker. I'm going to say, guess what, Kiriakou? I'm going to get hurt within 5 minutes of starting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm hurt. I'm hurt.
Right.
Where's my paper? I'm in. I got hurt. And this son of a gun's not paying. So I can see where this could be kind of abused, where all of a sudden they're dropping things on their feet. They're taking, you know what I mean? So it sounds terrific, but don't think that criminal minds can't interrupt the sagacity of the program.
Yeah. Lionel, thank you for these insights. Stay right there. When we come back, we're going to ask Lionel about an even more absurd sentence for an even more important whistleblower. So stay tuned. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with media critic, analyst, and all-around well-informed guy Lionel about the different forms that whistleblowing takes. Lionel, thanks again for being with us.
Indeed.
Lionel, in late January, a former CIA software engineer by the name of Joshua Schulte was sentenced to 40 years in prison after being convicted of sending documents to WikiLeaks that have come to be known as Vault 7. The CIA has said that this was the worst breach of classified information in the CIA's history. Schulte, though, was adamant that he was not the source of the leak. And indeed, there was no direct evidence that he had actually done this. Prosecutors said that there was no evidence because he was such a computer genius that he was actually able to cover his electronic tracks, and he was convicted. There's no parole in the federal prison system, and so the shortest sentence that he has to serve is 34 years. So that's 40 minus good behavior time, 34 years, of which at least the first 14 years will be in a maximum security penitentiary. Schulte was accused of releasing evidence of the CIA's ability to turn smart TVs into microphones so that they could eavesdrop on conversations even with the TV turned off. He was accused of releasing evidence that the CIA is able to take over cars by hacking into the vehicle's computer system and then to force the car off the road or off a bridge or into a tree. And there were at least a dozen other programs that he was accused of compromising. To me, this fits the bill of whistleblower. What are your thoughts? Should we fear people like Joshua Schulte, or should we celebrate them?
Well, first, what you just told me, think about what you just said. I'm thinking to myself, well, you imprison this guy? You should give him an award.
Yes.
That's number one. Number two, the CIA says, this is the worst breach ever. Did it hurt you? Huh? Did it hurt you? Were there any missions compromised, or was it merely a breach? If I broke into your home but didn't take anything, I mean, technically that's burglary, but don't you think that should be a mitigating fact? Or what if, for example, I said, there's a person who is dead. There are no fingerprints, no forensics, no nothing, no hair, no fiber. But we're going to charge you with, convict you of murder. What about the lack of evidence? That's how good you are. Mm-hmm. You're so stealth-like in your murdering. Now, you also, under federal sentencing, there is no parole. Under the Truth in Sentencing Act, you have to serve 85%.
That's right.
Let me talk to you about that very quickly. Do you know what prison guards say? Great. Take away the incentive. In the old days, in a regular system, when you would have somebody that says, listen, you play your cards right, get a GRE, work out, and maybe save a guard's life, we will knock all this time off, learn something, help people, learn a trade.
Absolutely
right. There were incentives.
Right. Absolutely
right. But now
right.
you're saying, just sit back and, I remember years ago, when I was a prosecutor, there was a discussion of should we take away weightlifting and from the prisoners? Because this gave them something to do. And the guards would say no. But let me go back to what you're saying. Remember the case of Michael Hastings, this man, all of a sudden his car just sped out of nowhere. It seems like, what was this about? And, well, we don't know. We're not really sure. And I love when they say, I don't want to get conspiratorial, but that is a bit odd.
Yes.
All of a sudden you pay for a lot of money for a very expensive car that, lo and behold, does something that a Yugo doesn't do. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. But let's go back to what we're talking about here. We need these folks. Remember in the case of Julian Assange, when they said to him, he said, I didn't. And by the way, there is a Supreme Court case called Bartnicki against Vopper. And it says, even if you, as a journalist, receive information that's stolen, let's take Schulte's information, and when he passed it on, what shields the journalist, theoretically, is this Bartnicki case, except in the case of Julian Assange, because he said, I didn't break into anything. They came to me. Yeah, but you might have helped them. Mm-hmm. So here is the question. Number one, this is what I want everybody to answer. Do you, America, or do you not want individuals who are involved in government agencies and offices to never tell you what your government is doing in violation of some rule? Do you want that? So if your government, if there is water in Flint, Michigan, or some radioactive chemical that's in, do you want to live in a world? And the answer is, of course, no. I want, especially if it helps me. Great. Now, how do you propose to protect people? Are we going to have I submit, just like we have quietem legislation, which allows you to benefit in the proportion of monies that you save by alerting the government to fraud? Well, that's whistleblowing. Quietem legislation, people make fortunes of that.
Right.
We ought to have almost a separate bureau or some type of a tribunal that determines the information. Also, did you try any other methods of letting the country know about this? Some people do it out of desperation. Some people are not. That's not their first move. Maybe they went to the newspapers. Maybe they met with people in the agency. Listen, boss, you know this stuff is we have toasters that blow up, and you know something that people might want to know. What did they do prior to this? Mm-hmm. Is there any agency, any tribunal that somebody can go to at least determine the legitimacy of it? Because I don't want to live, I don't know about you, I don't want to live where people are disincentivized from warning me of my impending death, warning me of something that could kill me and my family. So I think people better know what we're talking about and give it a new name, whistleblower. How about, makshift journalist? What's a journalist? It's somebody who reports, somebody who's a reporter.
Right.
We need a different name.
Truth teller.
Yes, because remember, there's no such thing of being a whistleblower if it's fake.
That's right.
It's like, you know, libel is only libel if it's fake, if it's wrong, if it's false. But you never get, it's just like a conspiracy theory is always right. That's the problem. It's this thing so these people are actually warning us. I've never heard of anybody who was put in prison for a frivolous, unimportant whistleblowing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like when you save the government 30 cents a year on packaging, or, you know, it's always something that's drastic, critical, affects people's lives. That's the stuff. So the more time you get in prison, the more important it was for the country to find out about it. Think about that. What kind of a message is that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Lionel, getting back to the notion of long sentences serving as a deterrence or not serving as a deterrent, I actually find that to be disingenuous. In 1996, when I was working at the CIA, I sat next to a woman who was having an affair with a journalist with CNN. In the course of pillow talk, she revealed classified information to him, which he then promptly repeated on the air. The CIA investigated the leak, and they immediately found that my coworker was the source. She was not charged with espionage. She wasn't even fired by the CIA. Instead, she was suspended without pay for 2 weeks. A strongly worded letter was put in her personnel file, and she was not eligible for promotion for 1 year. That was enough. She never revealed classified information ever again. What do you think that says about the draconian sentences that we've seen in recent years? More than 5 years for Reality Winner, for example. More than 4 years for Daniel Hale. Now 40 years for Joshua Schulte. What are we supposed to take from all that?
This is interesting because this is not a whistleblower. By the way, there's a terrible pun that I could be using, but I'm not going to do it because it's a family show. This is not a whistleblower in the classic sense. This is somebody who actually reveals like let's use, if whistleblower is bad, a squealer, mm-hmm. a reverse rat, somebody who is, you know, a veritable traitor. I don't know what you want to call somebody who is a government agent who basically, remember General Petraeus got into a little problem with somebody that he perhaps some, remember that one? Remember
with
University
his girlfriend.
Of Denver? And, you know, wouldn't you think, don't you think that somewhere there's some school that they take you to and say, now listen, here's torture. This is how to avoid torture and waterboarding. But when you're in bed with somebody, that's what we should really double down on. Imagine the training they go through to stimulate that, just to make it real, like live fire. Anyway, I'm getting off into this. But what happens is, think about this message. She's not, what was her self-interest? What was, the whistleblower says, I'm trying to do something to help society. Shut up, you 80 years. No, mm-hmm. you don't understand. Kids are eating ground glass. Yo, miserable. 80 years. This one is, I'm trying to make time with this guy. I'm just trying to impress him. I'm not benefiting anybody. I got a big mouth. It's not like Ralph Cramden. I'm just yakking it up for no reason. This is the worst. This is negligence. It could be, if you think about it, treasonous. You weren't tortured? Bam! Shocking up. We're in a bed, a couple of hits of Chardonnay, and yeah. Now, what does this tell you? This would be the worst. And by the way, you know that everybody in her division or area was saying, wow, let's see what, imagine what's going to happen to this one. A letter in her file?
Yeah. Right.
And the file's top secret.
Yes, it is.
That's the best part.
Yes, it
Who
is
gets
top
to
secret.
See the yeah, so it's like double secret probation. I mean, this is schizophrenic. This is the worst. What kind of training do you think? And also a message. So I think I hope that if we can, if anybody, you know, watching this today as they are, I hope people realize they come away from this thinking, this doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Precisely.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. Well, I want to thank our guest, the incomparable Lionel, for joining us today and for sharing his insights. We were happy to have you, Lionel. And thanks to our viewers for taking the time to be with us. Charles-Louis de Sacandon, the 18th century French judge and philosopher known as Montesquieu, once said that there is no greater tyranny than that which is perpetrated under the shield of law and in the name of justice. I believe that that is exactly what we have seen develop right here in the United States over the past 20 years in its treatment of whistleblowers. What remains is for the rest of us to fight. As Edmund Burke once said, all that tyranny needs to gain a foothold is for good people of good conscience to remain silent. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.